Good morning. Good morning to the flowers. Good morning to the salmon. Good morning to the sky. Good morning to the sun. Good morning to the honey, the honey bun, the one in the oven. Good morning to your cat. Good morning to your rat. Good morning to the bats in your belfry. Because it is August the 30th, 2026. It is right around 7 a.m. here on the Olympic Peninsula, and I have a message for you. Hi, my name is Chuck Bradley. I've been kidnapped. I was taken from the plow. The bad guys have me now. My wife is a rotten sow. They burn my left nut. In my chest they made a cut. A gas I made from my butt, but I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm okay. Thanks. Hi. My name is Deborah Sims. I've been murdered. I was standing by the gate. He said his name was Nate. I said, well, that's great. We danced the night. We danced till day. I asked to go home. He said, okay. We arrived back at my door. He called me a nasty whore. He cut my throat. He stood there with that affect, that gloat, and note. Please let it be noted. I simply drifted away. But I'm okay. As the blood flows down the street, I'm fine. I had a good old time. You'll be with me soon at the end of time. Thanks. Thanks, baby. You'll be with me at the end of time. I got old scratchety throat. Because I'm guilty of flum-dee-dum. Hello. My name is Brian York. I was run over by a dork. Out of a cork and a bottle and a walk, I had a little talk. I stood on the street. I made a nice greet to the woman in red. Then a car swerved by, and now I'm dead. I'm on that road. My blood is spread. But I'm okay. I'm gonna be just fine. Thanks for calling. We'll talk real soon. We're all going, baby. We're all traveling. We're gonna cross that bridge with Aunt Midge. She's there waiting in the Aunt B paradise, black and white, apple pie. And she's waiting for you, baby, because we're all gonna get there in time. Motherfucker. Yeah, I don't know. I read once, or somebody told me once. I read once, maybe it was in the book of Revelations, right? Oh, Dan, don't be coy. I was writing code about 20 years ago, and this young man, he seemed like a boy. He was a preacher in the cubicle next to me, and he said 144,000 will be saved. And I asked him what he meant by that. He said 144,000 will be saved. I asked, is it not 139,999? You know, whatever. 130 whatever, right? Could it be 2 or 3? Could it be 150,000? I was being a jerk. And I had to get back to work. We were converting Java code to C# using ASP.NET. You better bet a migraine I did get. And I started going down with that terrible frown to the coffee zone. Tired to the bone. Cranking out code for my baby. And you know she'd be gone someday. But still, in all that noise, with all the coder boys, with all the special bros, with all the gamer hoes, only 144,000 will be saved. Fallen heroes by the grave. Morbid tones will be played. Every pilgrim in Nashville had a shave. Don't forget the thing he saw. Grab your woman by the bra. Break the door, steal the car. Drive to Reno, see the Shaw. Mountains fall. Ravens call. Mother's ball. As tears rush down, the ground breaks, the world shakes, kingly serpents make blood cakes. Dumpling deal, stew congealed, crowds reel from the clown. Brown flows, the city glows, families executed at the center of town. A sea disturbed by the squall, pirate ship standing tall, taking turns, lightning earns, a wicked churn, the mainsail stalls. God is standing, he sees the storm, forming, arriving, leaving, returning, breaking the wheel. He doesn't care how you feel. The toil and sweat, every bet through their loss, it is revealed. A wind will blow, starting soft. The wise men smile, the bitter scoff. The light is warm beyond the storm. All will conform to the truth. To the truth. All will conform to the truth he knows. You know what I'm saying, baby? But how I'm feeling is a little bit trapped, baby. How you feeling? Boiled frogs. Does that sound good for breakfast? Boiled frogs? I'd like to have boiled frogs and eggs and biscuit pudding. I live in Britain. I have no taste. Why don't you overcook that turkey over there? Why don't you undercook that whitefish over there? Why don't you boil chicken? You're in Great Britain. Why don't you serve lamb? You know it's a fucking scam. boiled frogs can jump out, but they don't know what's happening, baby. I know what's happening. I can't jump out. Boiled frogs are remembered, even if dismembered. They don't remember themselves. I am not remembered, but I will never forget the trauma, and I don't exist. Boiled frogs endure. They die, but there are more. Always more from that whore called nature, bounding forth with hopeful arc, swimming and playing, always sure. The boiled frog endures. I do not endure. I wither away. Dust that is discarded, left in the garbage someday. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. This is a strange universe, and that's the nicest thing you can say. I was watching this, you know, I've been ODing on documentaries this summer, and I was watching this Netflix documentary about a man and a woman who faked a kidnapping, and there's this scene where a dude gets a call, and the person on the other end says, "Hi, my name is Denise Huskins. I'm kidnapped. Otherwise, I'm fine." And that's a strange message to get. Like, you know, I could see, "Hi, my name is Denise Huskins," or I would even just say Denise. I'm not sure I would say my last name. "I'm kidnapped, you know, help me," or something. But no, "Otherwise, I'm fine. I've been kidnapped. I've been, you know, deprived of my dignity. Other terrible things have probably happened," and you can watch the documentary yourself. But other than that, I'm okay. I'm fine. I was tossed out of a plane because the captain went insane. My wife, Jane, was having backdoor Betty with Jody on the train. My dog was gone. My truck was burning. I'm falling to my death, but listen, with my last breath, I'll tell you, I'm okay. I'm fine. I was fighting in a war. My life I did adore. They dropped the poison gas. It burned my lungs, but alas, I'm okay. My lungs are crackly. My skin is burning. My heart is turning. But listen, buddy, I'm okay. I'm gonna be fine. I'll just have a drink of my bitter wine. Yeah. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. "We need to hear the words people wish to express, even the ones that cause us pain. Often the painful words reveal pain in others, so we might help them heal." Now, you might say, "Well, Dan, on this Sunday morning, what the actual F does that mean?" Well, here's the thing. I don't have a magical answer to the question of free speech. I'm a radical supporter of free speech up to certain points. But to me, the points or the lines are where one person's choices infringe upon another person's dignity. And so for things like, you know, child pornography, I think that's terrible. I think it's taboo. I think it's something that should be prevented and stopped. Is the government the best way to do it? I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I think in many cases, the government facilitates this, but the bottom line is, if someone were to tell me, "Dan, I don't, you know, I know somebody who posts child pornography online and I know where their server is. would it be okay for me to destroy their server? And my answer is, probably I can't say over the internet, but, you know, wink, wink. Okay? Now, does that mean I'm opposed to free speech? No. I think speech, there's a transition point between speech and violence. And again, it deals with dignity. It deals with self-defense. You know, your free speech does not allow you to put on a show where you torture people to death, for example. I wouldn't call a snuff flick an example of free speech. But on the other hand, I would call it an act of violence. And that line, I believe, is relatively easy to identify, but most people can't see it. They don't understand it. So they would just assume, take any scary thought and censor it. It's kind of like the book and then the movie, A Clockwork Orange. It's a terribly violent story. And it's not a happy story. And if you were to say, well, if we removed it, would the world be worse off? And you could make the argument the world might not notice. But the truth is, another writer would come along to write a similar story. You know, I'm getting into J.G. Ballard right now. And there were lots of writers in that post-World War II period who expressed concern about the modern and the postmodern. And I wouldn't just say concern, but wanted to apply an analysis of how technology was impacting the social sphere. So I just don't think you can actually censor ideas. Not really. I mean, you can burn books and you can get rid of books, but you can't really censor ideas. And so am I opposed to books that deal with these subjects up to a point? I can't be, because I think people should be allowed to express themselves. But at the same time, I think there is a point at which it does become violence. And I can't really say it's a simple thing. Getting back to the Dr. Freckles quote, it would be better for us to hear people, even the most awful people you can imagine, because a couple things are possible. Sometimes they're not so awful. Not everybody's a pedophile. Not everybody's out to do or cause harm. Not everyone's violent. Sometimes people just need to express a painful idea that might not even be true, and they might even admit at some point in the future is false. They just want to be heard. And if all it is to be heard, then yeah, I think we need to be relatively liberal with our concept of free speech. But folks, there are no easy answers. So I'm going to go to the next topic. Here's another quote from Dr. Freckles. All you need to know about my words, they are fragments of my unconscious. They are covered in fecal matter. This is Dr. Freckles speaking to you from the future. This is all you need to know about my words. They are fragments of my subconscious, my darkness, my shadow, and they're all covered in fecal matter. All of them. Every single one, baby. Anyways, I'm not going to spend time on that one. So there was a mountain collapse, a glacier collapse, a glacier system. I think that there's a phrase a geologist might use, but there was a major geological event in Nepal, and a lot of people were killed. And this is a tragedy, folks. I mean, let's be blunt. This is a scary, sad. And when you consider, it was a violently powerful and rapid sort of destruction, because it involved a massive amount of kinetic energy being released all at once. That's one way of thinking of a mountain collapse or a mountain slide or a permafrost collapse. It's kind of like when you see that giant hole in Russia, the one in Siberia. I think they've dubbed it the hole to hell. It's gotten bigger and bigger. And it started out a relatively small hole, but again, as the permafrost collapses, that ice that used to be part of the soil is no longer there. In the case of the mountains, listen, over time, mountains are impacted by weather, by wind and rain, and time, and yes, earthquakes, and cracks form. And over time, in some cases, what fills the cracks is water, and that water might freeze. And if it stays frozen for a long time, and I'd argue for more than 2 years, because that definition is a dumb definition of permafrost, unless you think permanent means 2 years. But, you know, let's say since the last ice age, a lot of this ice that is now melting in the mountains has been frozen since the last ice age for about, you know, 8, 9, 10,000 years. That's a long time, folks. And it's important to recognize that. And in that time, it has been part of the mountain. And it's not just in the Himalayas, folks. It's all around the world. I have a link to a video that deals with Switzerland and something you can look at if you want to. I have a couple links in the notes, but the bottom line is this is not just a local event to the Himalayas. And I'm going to throw a conspiracy theory out there because I believe it's true, but I can't prove it. I think that if this is happening, what we're seeing is the tip of the iceberg. If this is happening in remote areas, I think they're doing everything they can to cover it up. And that's the thing about mountain collapse is that, you know, a lot of people don't go mountain climbing. And they're not necessarily there when these things happen. And not all of them are theatrical events. Sometimes it's just a little subsidence that gets bigger over time. It's not always a rapid kinetic event. So, folks, whatever your thoughts are on Al Gore and Greta Thunberg, and again, my thoughts are is that they're part of the propaganda machine, it does seem like something is going on. And what worries me is I think there are people who know what's going on, and they're lying to us. And folks, I've been consistent on that issue for 10 years. You know, I don't mean just the issue of the environment and other things. I've been talking about this issue of honesty and how catastrophically dangerous, especially if you want to have a free society, how dangerous it is to lie to people about things that are important. And what's worse, to gaslight them and to provide other lesser catastrophes as mental options for the third eye. Oh, here's the monkey herpes. Look at Putin. Oh my God, Antifa. What did Nick Shirley find out? Donald Trump is a giant noisemaker. He's a giant trauma monkey. He's a big crying baby. Folks, meditate on this. And this is why you can't really take him as a person seriously. But symbolically, he's more than just a calm smoke at this point. He's a big crying baby. And what is it difficult to ignore? A big crying baby. So if you're wondering, are they doing everything they can to carpet bomb your third eye and to keep you from seeing what's going on right above your heads, folks? Every single day, there's other stuff going on right above your heads. You can research Popeye, Vietnam, and then you can look at what happened in Appalachia just a couple years ago and use your fucking heads. But the time is running out for pretend, I'd say. So, Dan, you're a bastard. I know. I'm a bastard. I'm a son of a bitch. I have a note about the gun issue. I'm so tired of the gun issue. And let me explain why. Every living thing that's ever been born into existence and has the awareness or motility, mobility, behavior to indicate that it can and wants to survive has a right to defend itself. It doesn't mean it will. If you toss me into the jungle with a bunch of tigers and it's just me at the age of 56 and I got no weapons, I'm probably going to end up in somebody's stool. You know, like I said, my words come from my unconscious and they're covered in fecal matter because I was in the tiger for a while. Every single living thing, it's not even something a government could give you the right to have since you were born with it. And in that sense, it's a natural right. The right of self-defense is an inherent right to existence. It's not something that you debate. We can debate how parents should treat guns vis-a-vis their kids. I'm not saying we should have laws. You know my politics. I don't have any. So I just assume we look for better solutions than more laws. But as far as like whether people should be allowed to own a gun to defend themselves, to me, that's always seemed absurd. and it seems more absurd now. And you could say, well, Dan, it's because the elite want to take over, but then there's the other side. There's all these quote-unquote pro-gun people who fetishize guns. You know, somebody says online, I have 20 ARs. Great. Great. It seems like you're collecting them like they're baseball cards. And that's okay if you want to do that. But that's not the purpose. My question is, do you have 20 friends who know how to use those weapons and do you trust them? Because then that's a flex. To me, that's a flex. You say you've got 20 ARs. Do you have 20 friends or 20 family members? Excuse me, 19, right? That you would trust to know how to use them and you would trust in a situation that was desperate. If the answer to either one of those is no, then yes, you've got a bunch of baseball cards. But those aren't necessarily things you're going to effectively use. A lot of the gun rights people will defend guns up to the point of purpose. And then when you talk about the purpose, it's like, well, wait a minute. I'm voting for this guy next year. I'm voting for that guy next year. Come next election cycle, we'll be free, Dan. Lucy said there's a football and we can meet in the park. Lucy said we can play football. And this time she's holding it right. Yeah, but it's always the same, folks. Every single fucking time, it's always the same. You think you're going to be saved by some action of voting. And folks, this is not me advocating violence, because I am not. To the Secret Service who's listening, and you guys are my only listeners, and I love you, this is not a person advocating for violence. But I am advocating for people to use some common sense. And if you're going to purchase 20 rifles, and you can only use one at a time, maybe you should seriously consider getting to know more people in your life that could be part of your group, your team, your tribe. Because at this point in time, if it's just you alone in the darkness, it's not impossible. But even if you survive, then what? And believe me, this is one hermit talking to another out there. I get it. I could imagine if I had the resources living in a bunker for the rest of my life. It's not that I hate people, I just don't like them very much. And there are people I like, but frankly, folks, a lot of people are just turds, and at this point, it's pretty bad. But still, even with that, I'm a poor person. So even if I wanted to live in a bunker in a castle someplace on the edge of space and time, I don't have the resources to do that. And most of the people I know don't have the resources either. So the other side of what's bizarre about the gun discussion is what I want to leave you with. If you have a bunch of guns, then you need to ask yourself at this point in time, are there people that you would give those guns to in a situation where you needed to protect your family, your property, your survival? Next topic. Dan, you're crazy. I am crazy. I'm very crazy. I come from a hazy, hazy, spazy place. It's funny, my website is where I keep my notes for my podcast. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. And it has this fun way of not working at the very moment that I need it to work. And I'm not saying, but like the Ancient Aliens guy, I kinda am. I'm being cagey, but y'all know what I'm talking about. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. There is something sinister about the ordinary that most people dismiss. And this is a little bit of a subversive idea in the context of the bourgeoisie, the middle class, the people that frankly make society work, raise families, have kids. But at the same time, and this is where you get into what I would call the abstraction of government and quote unquote civilization, is that so many things that seem normal can actually have in this modern world a sinister side to them. And it's something that we should actually consider. It's one of the reasons why folks, I've been very critical of the Milgram experiment. People love to quote it, but folks, it's a flawed, in many ways, it's a flawed experiment from the get-go, because it assumes that the people that make the important decisions are in the situation that the experiment defines. It's like the reason for the experiment. I mean, do you know it's about Adolf Eichmann and about him being on trial in Israel? And brothers and sisters, Eichmann was a bureaucrat. He was a paper pusher. I'm not saying he himself didn't kill any Jewish people, but he could have controlled an entire campaign of killing, and he wouldn't have had to kill one person. And again, I don't want to get into the Holocaust right now, because to me, frankly, that is one of the new third rails of conversation in this sort of pre-Grinken time, late Bo Blimpdoc period. But the bottom line is this, folks. People like Eichmann would have never had to see any violence if they didn't want to. And the people that worked for him were bureaucrats. They were paper pushers, folks. They were people that scheduled resources. They did logistics and supply chain. If you're saying that that's the same as being in the Milgram experiment, you're confused. In the Milgram experiment, you can hear the screams. The people that worked for Eichmann never had to hear the screams if they didn't want to, and most of them probably didn't. Now, flash forward to today, and you have these layers of mechanical distance between the act of killing and the people that kill. And brothers and sisters, there's a huge supply chain, a huge network of experts, an entire structure that leads to one person being killed with a drone. And so when people talk about drone warfare, listen, you can create drones, you can participate in drones, you can deliver the pizza to the people that program the drones and that train the AIs. And at the end of the day, every piece of that puzzle is kind of important to include the pizza guy. That's reality, folks. That's your Milgram experiment. And nobody has to hear the screams. Nobody has to witness the complete violence and abandon of the technological and the postmodern gone wild. Next topic. There's something sinister, folks, about the ordinary. I'm just going to leave it there for you to ponder. Maybe it's related to my J.G. Ballard infatuation of late. I'm getting into J.G. Ballard. I don't know how much I want to talk about that right now, but I'd never really read any J.G. Ballard, so yeah, there we go. Here's another quote from Dr. Freckles. No one will get it until there's nothing left to get. I don't love or hate that one. Here's another one from Dr. Freckles. We can call something an extreme inflationary or deflationary economic event based on data. We can do it based on data, right? Do you know what they stopped collecting during an economic collapse? We can talk about depressions. We can talk about recessions. We can talk about the business cycle based on data. Do you know what they stopped collecting? Do you know what they stopped collecting? Do you know Western Rome stopped collecting after the collapse? Data. Yeah. Folks, this is the thing about economic collapse, is that the very data you use to monitor the coming event is what basically disappears after you get to that singularity. So I think a lot of people are kind of looking at this the wrong way right now. You know, again, you're thinking in terms of being warned. And my advice would be, they're probably not going to warn you. It's, you know. It was Big Boob Day the other day, and I have a picture of myself in the notes. Again, really important that you know that it was Big Boob Day. Here's an article from Inspinet.com. Inspinet.com. And this was published a little more than a year ago on June the 3rd, 2025. And it was written by Joshua Falcon. Headline: Engineers in Denmark create a soft robot inspired by earthworms. A robot has been created by the Soft Robotics Laboratory at the University of Southern Denmark. It has a body built with antagonistic pneumatic actuators, inflatable chambers that expand and contract rhythmically. This cyclic action integrated with asymmetric friction supplied by the Kiragarni skin, allows it to move forward without the need for wheels or legs. The Kiragami skin is composed of strategic cuts in repeated patterns, giving it directional flexibility. This generates greater backward resistance than the forward resistance, simulating how mushrooms function in the skin of real worms. Using this design, the robot can move in a straight line or rotate through an asymmetric inflation sequence. Yeah, I'm gonna stop there. So you all know about Dr. Torpedo Head. And Dr. Torpedo Head is a fictional artifact of a disturbed mind. Dr. Torpedo Head is a drone, a little robot that you put on your night table before you go to sleep. You set it and forget it. You set it for 1 a.m., you set it for 2 a.m., you set it for the witching hour. You know the time the aliens visit? And then you're asleep, and Dr. Torpedo Head goes into your bed and starts crawling up the hole. You know the hole. We don't need to elaborate on what the hole is. Sure, you have lots of holes. But there's one hole in particular that would be relevant to a colonoscopy, because Dr. Torpedo Head is an automated, robotic, analytical, artificially intelligent, stereophonic drone colonoscopy bot. And it's gonna go up there, and it's gonna look for stuff. It's gonna look for tumors, and if it finds one, it fires a tiny laser. It fires a tiny taser. If it finds a parasite. Yeah. And does it shock me that Denmark would be leading the way with Dr. Torpedo Head type technologies? No. No, if you follow my podcast, you know that there's a pattern of wretchedness that goes back thousands, if not tens of thousands of years, back to Denmark, back to Copenhagen, back to when the reptilians ruled, and the only people dark enough to defeat them, the only people evil enough and dastardly enough, the nastiest people ever were the, you know, the Danish people. And yet they smile, yeah, they smile. Like Lyle the crocodile. Danish person will smile at you. They'll invite you to dinner. They'll give you a gift. You'll put it on your nightstand. The gift opens the box. The gift crawls in the bed. The gift goes up your butt. Thank you, Pizza Hut. Right, Pizza Hut, thank you. Anyways, Dan, that's terrible. You guys, Dr. Torpedo Head is coming. I've said it. I keep saying it. Nobody wants to believe me. I have a link to an article about Haiti. People ask me the question, what's going on in the world? Folks, it's kind of like permafrost collapse. If it's remote enough, if they can cover it up, they are. If you're asking me at this point, are they covering up the collapse of societies around the world? And my answer is, yes, I believe they are. I cannot prove it. This is intuitive. But if we're getting little glimpses of chaos in places like Haiti, or if we're hearing about water shortages in Puerto Rico, I'm asking you to understand that I personally believe it's worse, not better. A lot of people will tell you, oh, it's not that bad. And frankly, folks, The Potemkin village model of vacationing is so well orchestrated at this point that a person could go on a tour. They could take a boat ride someplace, and maybe it would seem like everything's okay. But brothers and sisters, I'm more inclined to believe that the opposite is true. So I have a link to an article about gang attacks in Haiti. You can take a look if you want to. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. Faith isn't as much a barrier as it is a choice to see there is no barrier. Well, my faith situation vis-a-vis God is not so great right now that I really want to spend extra time on that one. I just got to tell you straight up. Okay, this is really important, and you can go to the link in the notes that comes from Cairo 7, but this is really, really important. This is an announcement. This is an announcement from Burger King. Ding, ding, ding. They're making a change to their chicken nuggets. They're adding a new thing. They're adding a new ingredient. You can guess what it is. Is it paprika? Is it celery? Is it carrots? No, they're adding something really revolutionary to their chicken nuggets. They're adding chicken. Yes, they're adding chicken to their chicken nuggets. Introducing chicken in a chicken nugget. And McDonald's and KFC. We all know why KFC is KFC, right? Don't need to talk about that again. So there's this particular show called The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. I am not going to read the article. I have never seen the show. I am kind of intrigued by the reality show phenomena. I don't know. I don't even want to spend time on this. I know I have a couple people who listen who are Mormons, and this is what I would say of Mormons and Presbyterians and Catholics and you name it. Not, I don't apply this to Scientologists. There are limits. There's one church. There's not 20 churches. There's not a million churches. There is one church, and it is not Rome. It is not the Bishop of Rome. Whatever you want to say about that, it's not that. There's one church. Christ keeps the membership. There are many buildings. There are many 501c3s. There are many ministers who go to a university or a college or a monastery to learn their trade. And again, I'm not denigrating that. But just because there are many ministers and many universities, you need to be clear. If you call yourself a Christian, if you call yourself a disciple of Christ, you are also a minister. Definitely a minister of last resort. If they ever come around and tell you again, and folks, this could happen again because I think it never really stopped in a certain way. But if they tell you the Walmart's open, they tell you the banks are open, they tell you that, you know, Burger King is open with this new chicken nugget that probably contains chicken, then guess what? Church is open too. And if the church tells you the church is closed, then guess what you can do, Christian? You can have church at your home. And that's as much as I can say at this point, because whatever's coming next, we won't know for sure. Christ said that specifically. We can look to the signs, but folks, do we really have the discernment? Are we pure of heart enough? Can we really hear the voice of the Holy Spirit at this point? Between you and I, over the din of Satan, I can't really say. But if you're interested in this Hulu show, The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, look into it. So I've had an insight that I consider so critical that it pulls together all of my postmodernist, pre-classical, wraparound, cynical criticism. This is the totalistic theory. This is the idea that combines all ideas. This is how we understand the epic, what comes next. This is how we understand the end. But you're okay. I'm okay. We'll be fine. Listen to this story. I've puzzled over the lines in the sky. The clear skies become cloudy, and the planes flying by. It's a riddle, wrapped in a puzzle, touching an enigma, having sideways sex with a conundrum, investigating a kerfuffle. Why? Why? Where do those spray lines come from? Is it engine exhaust? Is it geoengineering like Dane Wigington says? Are they poisoning us? Are they obscuring the approach of Planet X so many possibilities exist for this But no one talks about the one thing that's right in our faces. Every day, we go to the kitchen and we look at it every day. We add it to our eggs and our potatoes and our beefs and our biscuits. It's called seasoning. What if, like curry, spice, or pepper, they are simply getting their chicken McNuggets ready for the feast? There are 70-foot-tall aliens coming from the star system Desdra. It's in quadrant 778. They are hungry. They are foodies. And nothing matters compared to this. They're heading here. It's almost dinner time. Venezuela, the Strait of Hormuz, the Ukraine war, the COVID and the vaccine. It's about the spice. It was always about the spice. They're getting us ready. Generational spice experiments producing flavor country mutant recipes for tasty humans with very little aftertaste. If you've had lizards on skewers in Belize, lizards on skewers in Belize or Miami, then you should know what kind of cage bounty these aliens or Nephilim have in store for their palate and us. Those aliens aren't messing around. Your body, especially if you live in Britain, your body is moldy cheese curd, and the aliens want your fermented butt juice mixed with apple-sized pudding and pumpkin wine. It's almost Halloween, and get that pumpkin wine. Your tired story of the dirty, shirtless minister and his busty assistant, Mary Angers, the stone hounds and the mirthful mighty scourge sojourning in your butthole, they don't care. You will be deep fried in whale oils as the mean-spirited aliens chomp us down street taco style. Texas barbecue, Thai magic, 100% human ug ribs. Maybe you escape to the mountain refuge, where women that look like Sydney Sweeney care for your wounds and offer you a free handy. Maybe. That's a kingdom not far off and ready to go. Your friends will abandon you before the giants, making side deals and selling cheese wheels made from discarded Danish people and French bulldogs. Cheese wheels. Your family will splinter and go all helter-skelter, seething with hot bloody pain and the shame of TV dinner nightmares. Hoop dreams give way to midnight basketball as the channel chasers hunt mugskirt and the women offer up their fruit ballast to darker gods. Your cube steak is a mistake. Relent, 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 repent. There's no amount of begging that dissuade the colossus beings lumbering through your town, chomping on humans, remembering the cumin pinching off a loaf like an oaf or a gorilla made of steel. This is for real, baby, and no amount of dodging will change the eye beam pointing towards your fallen soul. Your kite smile lifestyle has been destroyed and devastated, and there's no going back to Mayberry. Opie is moving in next door, and the whore wives of Detroit have no one to blame but their own lame underwear folly. You will become Eddie Cake, and Drake will open for Music Fest where the aliens eat the rest. So get up and fly. Get up and fly. Get up and fly away, little baby cake. those contrails, those chemtrails, that geoengineering guff, when the sky looks really rough, it floats down. It's nanoscale. It becomes part of you, part of your brain, part of your heart, part of your liver, part of your kidneys, part of your breast meat, part of your thigh meat. And those 70-foot-tall aliens are almost here, and when they get here, they'll walk around like drunks in the South, and they're looking for you, because you're going to be their barbecue dream, but they're going to be the nightmare scheme that takes away your future understanding. So what are you going to do, bro? Or are you going to leave me a message on my phone? Dan, the 70-foot aliens, they ate my dog and my cat. Dan, the 70-foot aliens, they ate my house and my car. They ate my wife. They ate my kids. Dan, the 70-foot alien ate me, chopped me up, put me in a Thai soup. I was spicy and I was savory and I could feel myself sizzle. And now I'm in a pile of stool with my dogs and my cars and my house and my kids and my wife. But I'm okay, Dan. I'm gonna be just fine. Thanks for calling. I'm okay. Every single day, I'm getting better and better. Right to the letter. Have a great rest of your Sunday, my fellow human tacos.